The Tony Greg Show.
Welcome to the Tony Greg Show on Crick Info Talk.
News this week.
The third test between Sri Lanka and India in Colombo was always going to be a test of nerves for both teams. It's not often that teams go into a three-test match series with one apiece. And it was one convincing win apiece as well. Anil Kumble was clearly pleased to win the toss, and he chose to bat on what looked a very dry and very flat pitch. Sri Lanka's Ajantha Mendis and debutant Dhamika Prasad restricted India to a modest first inning score of just 249. Mendis finished with 5 for 56. What a time he's having with the ball. And paceman Prasad with 3 for 82 as India were bowled out on a good batting pitch. India slipped from 3 for 151 to 9 for 198 before Zahir Khan, who made 32, and Ishan Sharma also played very well for 17 odd out. They frustrated Sri Lanka with a 51-run partnership for the last wicket. And I've got to say, they rather showed up the batsmen there. It would have been a few of those senior middle-order players in the Indian lineup who would have been raising their eyebrows at the performance of these tail-enders. Fast bowler Sharma and then returned to dismiss Melinda Warnapura before Sri Lanka reached 1 for 14 in reply at stumps on day one. Mendis continued to haunt the Indian batsmen with clever variations. Left-handed opener Gautam Gambhir was the only specialist batsman to give a good account of himself, top scoring with a solid 74, and he did play very well for his third successive half century. India's famed middle order flopped yet again. Sourav Ganguly made 35, got a start and then got out. VVS Laxman did the same, got 25. Both failed to convert starts into beginnings. While Sachin Tendulkar only got 6 and Rahul Dravid 10, they weren't allowed to settle. Prasad did the early damage with a triple strike, having in-form opener Virender Sehwag caught behind in his first spell with an absolute beauty, and then trapping Dravid and Tendulkar leg before in his second spell. There is often one player in a test who swings the game, and there is no doubt that Kumar Sangakkara, who put together a really solid and uncharacteristic century, and in so doing helped Sri Lanka gain the advantage over an Indian outfit that was suffering injuries on a regular basis. Laxman sprained his ankle warming up, Tendulkar hyperextended his elbow, dropping a hard chance, and then Sharma fell in his follow-through, bruising a muscle. As each of these little sagas unfolded, one could see the Indians' body language reflect their plight. Meanwhile, Sangakkara just kept picking off the runs. The left-hander was involved in two really valuable partnerships as the hosts reached 251 for 6 in their first innings at stumps on day two. Sangakkara put on 95 for the third wicket with night watchman Chaminder Vaas, who made 47, and boy, did he play well. Very determined he was. And 60 for the fifth wicket with Talan Samarawera, who made 35 on an absorbing day's cricket. Sangakkara really erred in shot selection during his long innings, exactly what was required for the conditions. Although we did see some driving and cutting and pulling. And, well, it was his 1700 in 76 test matches. India struck twice in the last session just when it looked like Sri Lankans were on course for a huge lead, with left-arm seamer Zahir Khan having Samarawira caught behind and Anil Kumble trapping Tilakaratna Dilshan for 23 leg before wicket. Day three saw a bad strategy adopted by Kumble as he gave Sangakkara singles to get Prasanna Jayawardena on strike. Well, they succeeded in getting him on strike, but they didn't succeed in getting him out. Sangakkara eventually out for a superb 144, and if Sri Lanka win this test match, it'll be thanks to his contribution. Sri Lanka led by 147, and all eyes were then on the Indian openers to see what they could do. Well, I can tell you that Virender Sehwag still looks in wonderful form. He got off to a bit of a flyer again, ended up making 34, and he put on 62 with Gambhir for the opening partnership, and one had the feeling, really, that there were no real hooligans in this pitch. It was a nice catch from Samarawera that got rid of Sehwag. Gambhir also played well for his 26, but he got out to a bad shot, unfortunately. Ganguly, well, he didn't play too badly. He looked most comfortable against Mendis, but eventually was out LBW to Murali for 18. Murali has a thing about Ganguly, thinks that he can get him caught at slip almost every time he bowls to him. Patel out for 1 LBW to Mendis, and then Tendulkar also LBW for 14. So at that stage, 5 for 131. They ended up 161 for 5, so effectively with Dravid on 46 and Laxman on 17, playing quite well, although Laxman's got a bit of a problem with his leg, the Indians are now 14 for 5. That's the actual position. Prasad took 2 for 46, bowled well again. Mendes 2 for 39 and Murali 1 for 56. I've got to say that I think Sri Lanka should win this test match now in an absolute canter, unless Dravid and Laxman really scrub up well in the morning and go from strength to strength. But the way Mendes is bowling, that is highly unlikely. The reign of Kevin Peterson's test captaincy began encouragingly as England skittled South Africa for 194 and closed 49 for 1 on day 1 of the final test at the Oval. Graham Smith was dropped off Steve Harmison's very first ball of the match. And bear in mind, this is his comeback match. But his side slumped from 103 for 1, losing 6 for 55 in 18 overs after lunch. Harmison struck twice in 2 balls and James Anderson took 3 for 42, claimed his 100th test wickets. On day 2, Peterson marked his first test as captain with a century that helped England retain the upper hand. It is to be hoped that he will be just a little more responsible now that he is in charge. So far, so good. He guided his team past South Africa's first innings 192, but fell for 100 as Mackay Ntini ended up bowling well again, 5 for 94, and Jock Callis, 3 for 51, prompted a collapse. England were dismissed for 316 with Steve Harmison finishing, would you believe, 49 not out. Really good comeback match for him. Anderson removed Graham Smith and South Africa ended day 2 on 37 for 1, a deficit of 85 runs. Do remember, though, that South Africans tend to play like this once they've won the series. Bad weather on day 3 restricted play to only 17 overs, so the South Africans resumed and Alma played very well for an undefeated 71, but rain forced an early lunch and no further play was possible. At the time of recording, Alma Gill was out and day 4 is underway. The South Africans now lead by 56 with 5 wickets remaining. De Villiers and Boucher are together, but they certainly have an uphill battle here. England should win the test match, and if they do, what a good start for Kevin Peterson. The news that Michael Vaughan and Paul Collingwood have resigned the captaincy of England test and one-day teams came as a bit of a surprise to me, I've got to say. It was a tearful Michael Vaughan who, when he resigned after 5 years, said it was both the hardest and the easiest decision he had to make. He said that he put his heart and soul into the job, but his head was telling him to pack it in. Well, once I heard that, it became clear that he had lost confidence in his ability to bounce back the way he has done on numerous occasions in the past. Loss of confidence is the worst possible scenario for an incumbent captain, and believe me, the team soon picks up the vibes. Vaughan confirmed he would not play in the final test at the Oval, and as if on cue, Paul Collingwood quit as the one-day captain. Collingwood has also had a bad time lately, but he would have been across what Vaughan was doing and would certainly have known about his decision and would have gathered that England would want to go with Peterson for both Test and One Day Internationals. Collingwood has to concentrate on his game now and I'm sure he can contribute in the future. As for Vaughan, he has been a solid England captain and I, along with many others, I'm sure, in England, will not forget his leadership and contribution with the bat, particularly when he led England to that great series victory over the Australians at home.
What's eating Tony Greig?
The umpire review trial that is being conducted in Sri Lanka has created plenty of discussion. I keep trying to explain to people who don't like this experiment that the object of the exercise is to see to it that the correct decision is made. I can say with confidence that this trial is achieving just that. If, as a result of this very worthwhile experiment, standards improve, it will be adopted on a more regular basis. The players that I've spoken with all seem to like it. But as with any change, it will be the old-timers who will find fault. The interesting fact that has emerged is that the standing umpire can now give the benefit of the doubt, as he always has done, to the batsman, and then, with the benefit of technology, the decision that has been made can be reversed by the third umpire. There have been many cases like this where I think both umpires have been absolutely correct. There is no need for an umpire to feel bad about having a decision reversed. He is, after all, human, and can only call what he sees and what he hears. Similarly, the third umpire must take into consideration all the technology that is made available to him. It's all too early to give this experiment the absolute tick, but with a few modifications, it will survive, and the game will be better for it.
My favourite cricketer.
This week I'm going to dwell a little on Kevin Peterson, as it's not often a South African is asked to captain England. It's a great honour and a wonderful feeling, but rest assured, there will be those in England who would prefer an Englishman to have the job. And of course that's understandable. The problem is there isn't one good enough right now. There is nothing worse than having a player not good enough as a permanent member of the side because he's been made captain. What's more, it may just be that the responsibility of the captaincy is the best thing to happen to Peterson and therefore England. He is their best and most dangerous batsman by far, but he has on occasions given the impression that he plays for himself and in so doing has let England down a few times. This, if true, has to change and is likely to do so as a result of the responsibility that goes with the job. Kevin Peterson has had his moments of self-doubt, but they go back to the beginning of his Test career. He is much more mature now. I'm not saying England under Peterson will start winning everything, but I do expect them to improve as long as Peterson is allowed to do what good captains do, and that is to lead. If coach Peter Moores gets in his way, it will not work. The captain has to be the boss. After all, he's the one who will be sacked if things go wrong. Peterson's days of mohawk hairstyles are over, and he has to set an example in every sense to his players and youngsters alike. He will make mistakes, like we all do, but he is a superb player and will be forgiven as long as England go forward under his leadership. And let's face it, they're getting off to a great start.
One question only.
The question of the week comes from Y Guru from Paris. He wants to know what I think the current problem is with the England cricket setup. He says that ever since the Ashes in 2005, England have been dreaming in vain of getting back to the same lineup instead of moving on. Do you think now that they will come on and try to get a newer, better team ready for the next Ashes? Well, I think they probably will. There's no doubt about that. They have to move on a little bit. They're being forced to move on by Vaughan's decision. But that's not really the problem as far as English cricket is concerned. It's always been the system, the way I see it. The best system is one that starts with healthy club competition feeding directly into the first-class game. This happens in most other countries in the world. Players earn more as they progress through the ranks. They become more professional. In England, young players have to commit to a cricket career before they've really established themselves in the game. There's also there are many great players lost to the system because of the pressure of having a proper job. In Australia, for example, young players can work and play before having to commit to first-class cricket and becoming a full-time cricketer. So I think the system really is what needs to be changed from the ground up. And club cricket these days is so important because the sort of cricket that one gets in schools in places like England, Australia in particular, is nothing like it used to be. So the clubs play a very important role. But hopefully, you're right. I think that England must move on with some young players. We've seen what the Indians have done with their one-day side. They put some youngsters in there, and that made a huge difference to them. And we've seen plenty of examples of that over the years.
Well, we've got a bit of good news for those of you who have been taking part in my show each week. The last show of each month, we've decided that we're going to involve some of you that send in questions, and believe me, we get a lot of them. What we're going to do is we're going to try and answer a few of those questions, a few more of them, but we're also going to involve a couple of you who, in fact, send in a lot of questions on the basis that we'll have a bit of a discussion. So there's an opportunity for those of you who are interested in cricket and who've been listening and loyal to the Crick Info show that I do. Perhaps you'd like to put yourselves up, and then, who knows, we may just end up having a chat together.
Right, so please don't forget to email your queries to tony@crickinfo.com. Don't forget to mention your name and the place where you're from. I'll pick the best question and answer it on next week's show. Thanks for your company. This is Tony for Crick Info Talk, signing off.
The Tony Greig Show on Crick Info Talk.